Hello and welcome to this episode of Viewpoints. On this week's show, as the dust settles after the federal election, we'll take a look at what happened across the country. We'll turn to BC, Ontario, Quebec, and the Maritimes. Cape Breton's incumbent Liberal MPs are going back to Ottawa.
People wanted to talk about Canadian sovereignty, the Canadian economy as it relates to the United States, the leadership.
Liberal Fancy Landry unseats Conservative Perkins in South Shore St. Margaret's in Nova Scotia.
It's time to unify and, you know, just really build on this positivity and building that connection and building trust back.
To Ontario, where Conservative Philip Lawrence secures a third term in the Northumberland-Clark federal election. Then to the Pontiac region of Quebec, where Sophie Chatel wins a second mandate.
This victory belongs to every one of you.
In British Columbia, Conservative Ellis Ross was elected in the Skeena-Buckley Valley after 20 years of NDP rule. And bad blood between the U.S. and Canada has been hovering over the federal election. A growing number of Canadians are fed up with the U.S. selling their U.S. properties and boycotting travel south of the border. Some are calling it the exodus.
And we won't go back to the U.S. at all until he's gone. It's not worth it anymore.
Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Hello to you all. Nice to have you with us. My name is Boris Chassin. I'll be with you for the next half hour. So today we just came out of a federal election. Our journalists were covering it from east to west. Some of them will be with us today. First to the Maritimes. That is where the results first came in. Liberal Fancy Landry unseated Conservative Perkins in South Shore St. Margaret's in Liverpool, Nova Scotia. Fancy Landry beat the Conservative incumbent Rick Perkins by about 7,000 votes, grabbing 55% of support. More with Rick Conrad in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
Fancy Landry is originally from Caledonia and now lives in Bridgewater. She's a teacher at Forest Heights Community School in Chester Basin. Perkins was first elected in 2021, ousting then-Fisheries Minister Bernadette Jordan. Fancy Landry told QCCR the big issue on the campaign trail was affordability and people's concerns over the cost of living.
Also Trump and tariffs, and then, you know, being a coastal riding, definitely fisheries. But I really think, you know, right now it's time to unify all of our communities and, you know, just really build on this positivity and building that connection and building trust back where, you know, the Liberal Party might have lost trust in a couple of different areas within the riding.
She said she believes growing up in the area helped cement her win.
You know what? I think that was my secret sauce. We need someone who has been here, has their feet on the street, has raised their kids here, and really knows those intimate concerns and issues for the area and has the connections to kind of bring people together. And I really think it was that positivity in bringing people together that really spoke to a lot of people, because politics right now are just so divisive. And, you know, we need to unify as a nation. And I really felt like Prime Minister Mark Carney's plan that, you know, now that we have that mandate, that we can start doing a lot of really good work.
Fancy Landry said she's already heard from municipal leaders from around the riding. She said she's also heard from other Liberal MPs who want to help her in her new role. She said that in the next few weeks, she'll be getting orientation as a first-time MP and meeting with the rest of the newly elected Liberal caucus. She'll also be wrapping up her career as a teacher. But first, she's looking forward to getting to work as the MP for South Shore St. Margaret's.
That's been my tagline for the last 37 days was, let's get to work. Well, you know, now we're here and we've got to do we've got to put our money where our mouth is, right? And work really hard for the constituents, all constituents.
The Green Party's Mark Embritt finished third, followed by Patrick Boyd of the People's Party of Canada and independent candidate Hayden Henderson. Elections Canada said 50,700 people voted in South Shore St. Margaret's. That included just over 19,000 people who turned out for advance polls over the Easter weekend. I'm Rick Conrad.
This is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You are tuned to Viewpoints.
Sydney Glaser, Bay MP Micah Kellaway, and Cape Breton Council Antigonish MP Jamie Batiste were re-elected in last Monday's federal election in Nova Scotia. This is the third consecutive election win for both. Kellaway and Batiste say dealing with American tariffs and efforts to make Canada the 51st state were top campaign issues. Kellaway said his success is partly due to the hard work done by volunteers, while Batiste says that the campaign was especially stressful because he was grieving for his close friend who died suddenly earlier this year. Batiste and Kellaway are among 10 Nova Scotia Liberal MPs elected out of 11 ridings in the province, with the remaining one represented by a Conservative. Sydney, Glace Bay, and Cape Breton Council Antigonish each have a Conservative runner-up, with the NDP placing third in each riding. Here's Bill McCouche in Glace Bay, Nova Scotia.
Cape Breton's incumbent Liberal MPs are going back to Ottawa. Sydney, Glace Bay MP Mike Kellaway and Cape Breton Council Antigonish MP Jaime Batiste were re-elected. This is Kellaway's third consecutive election victory, but he says this campaign was unlike any other because it was heavily influenced by another country. Kellaway told CKOA Radio last night after he was declared the winner that the voters told him during the campaign their biggest concern is U.S. President Donald Trump's tariffs and efforts to make Canada the 51st state.
This election was different in terms of one particular issue, and people wanted to talk at the doorstep, the majority of people, about Canadian sovereignty, the Canadian economy as it relates to the United States. They wanted to talk about, the leadership, quite frankly, that would, the leadership it would take to focus on some of these existential problems that are facing us today.
Kellaway says he wanted to convince voters that Liberal leader Mark Carney is better equipped than any other party leader in dealing with U.S. relations.
From my vantage point, people were very tuned into the issues, and that was really encouraging because we had immense conversations on, you know, who's the best leader to pivot the Canadian economy, away from the Americans to a degree and look at other markets. How do we look at affordability measures through a new lens?
Kellaway says his campaign was successful partly because of the number of volunteers willing to participate.
We had more volunteers than we had, I would say, in the last two campaigns combined. What was encouraging for me was that in times of crisis, people have two options. One is to lay down their arms, as it were, or get engaged and fight back. And people, I got a sense that people had an energy level like I haven't seen in the last two elections.
Meanwhile, Batiste agrees with Kellaway and says voters were mainly concerned about tension in the U.S., and Carney made the best connection with Canadians.
I realized very quickly that the next 2 to 4 years is all going to be about how we handle our relationships with the Americans, how we deal with a trade war that no one wanted, and how we deal with China and how we deal with other nations. And we knew that the best person to put forward was Mark Carney. And I think that that's what resonated at the door.
Batiste says it was an exhausting campaign for more reasons than one. The 45-year-old's close friend died suddenly during the campaign.
Well, I want to dedicate this campaign to my late friend, Arnold Sillaboy. He was with me through almost every one of my nominations and elections. I lost him on February 22nd to a heart attack. I didn't know if I could do this without him. I was dealing with grief and dealing with loss, but we persevered, and this is an amazing night.
This is also the third straight election victory for Batiste. He and Kellaway are among 10 Nova Scotia Liberal MPs out of 11 ridings in the province. The remaining riding will be represented by a Conservative. Sydney Glace Bay and Cape Breton Council Antigonish each had a Conservative runner-up, with the NDP placing third in each riding. For the Local Journalism Initiative, Bill McCouche.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.
In Quebec, Sophie Châtel will represent the riding of Pontiac-Kitianzibi for the Liberal Party of Canada, taking roughly 54% of the vote in the April 28 election. Châtel has represented the riding since 2021. Châtel won with more than 54% of the votes compared to the second-place Conservative candidate, Brian Nolan, with 27.7% of the vote. Châtel said that voters had chosen unity over division decision, but noted that difficult times were ahead. Caleb Nickerson in Pontiac, Quebec.
Sophie Chatel will represent the riding of Pontiac-Kittigan-Zeebee for a second term as part of the winning Liberal Party under Mark Carney. Chatel, who watched the results come in with her supporters at the Chelsea Pub on Monday evening, thanked her supporters and staff, as well as members of the community that were in attendance.
But this victory belongs to every one of you. Everyone who believes in the power of community, the power of hope and hard work.
Based on Elections Canada results as of 11 a.m. Tuesday, with 252 out of 253 polling stations reporting, Chatel had 30,504 votes, or 54.5%, compared to the second-place Conservative candidate, Brian Nolan, at 15,996 votes, or 27.7%. In third place was the Bloc's Suzanne Proulx, with just over 6,000 votes, or 10.4%. Next was Gilbert Whiteduck of the NDP, with just under 3,000 votes, or 5%. Green Party Representative Claude Bertrand with 734 votes, or 1.3%, and Todd Hoffman of the PPC with 672 votes, or 1.2%. Speaking Monday evening, Chatel said that voters had chosen, quote, unity over division, but noted that difficult times were ahead.
They have chosen hope over despair, unity over division, trust over fear, and vision over doubt. But I will not sugarcoat it for you. The challenges ahead of us are immense. The years, the months will be difficult. Mais nous ne sommes pas seuls. Nous ne sommes pas seuls. Regardez-vous ce soir. Hein? C'est beau groupe. On n'est pas seuls. On est fort ensemble.
This is Caleb Nickerson with the Local Journalism Initiative.
On the air with Viewpoints.
To Ontario, where incumbent Conservative Philip Lawrence secured a third term for Northumberland Clark in the 2025 federal election. A much different race for Lawrence and the Conservatives, as the Liberals saw a surge in support following the resignation of former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in January. Lawrence took approximately 50% of the vote, the Liberal John Gowing 45%. Lawrence, while pleased with his personal result, expressed disappointment that the Conservatives did not form government. Details with Dan Jones in Cobourg, Ontario.
Philip Lawrence will return to Ottawa for a third term representing Northumberland Clark. Lawrence defeated his closest rival, Liberal John Goheen, with the NDP and Greens well off the pace. The two frontrunners took more than 90% of the vote. Lawrence, whose supporters dwindled by 11 p.m., realizing the Conservatives would not form government, says he had mixed feelings as to the election result, happy that he won, but he returned to opposition.
It's clear, of course, mixed results. We would have loved to have formed government, but it's clear that Canadians want change. And to me, the big story is actually the collapse of the New Democratic Party. Their support absolutely cratered. Our support was actually one of the highest since Brian Mulroney.
Lawrence ran a quiet campaign focused on door knocking, but participated in several all candidates forums and debates. He was humble in accepting the victory, acknowledging that approximately half of the voters did not cast a ballot in his favor. He committed to working to represent their needs, hoping to gain their support in the next federal election.
I realize that I was elected by, I think it'll probably work out to a little under 50%. That means 50% of the people didn't vote for me, and let's be candid. And I'm here to represent all those folks as well, those who voted and those who didn't vote for me. And so I look forward to meeting and talking to those folks who didn't vote for me so we can earn their trust and hopefully get them on side for the next election. It was such a different election, right? Like we saw, there was nothing for sure in this entire election. And quite frankly, I go into every election and act like I'm 2% down. And so those type of nervous anxiety is one of those things that keeps me going. So
Lawrence remarked that the election results demonstrate that Canadians want all parties in Parliament to work together on potential free trade negotiations or tariffs with the United States. I'm Dan Jones.
To British Columbia, where Dan Messick reports that the Conservative Ellis Ross was elected in Skeena-Buckley Valley after 20 years of NDP rule, unseating the incumbent Taylor Bacharach. Ross was elected with more than 47% of the vote. Ross won by more than 21,000 votes, a number the Conservatives have never achieved in the Skeena-Buckley Valley. Well, this election was not kind to small parties. The NDP lost so many seats, they no longer have official party status. The Green Party saw its number of seats halved from 2 to 1. You might wonder why some candidates bother when they know their chances of winning are so low. At least journalist Mia Johnson in Toronto did. So she called up Dan Meslin, the Green Party's riding association president in Owen Sound, just north of the city. He helped run the campaign there, which lost. But Meslin isn't discouraged. Far from it. He starts out by telling Mia how, when it came time to nominate a candidate, someone actually stood up and suggested they withdraw altogether.
Yeah, it was an unexpected debate, but I think it was really healthy to have. So we had two people who wanted to be the Green candidate. One was Natasha Akwenzi, and the other was Blake Martin. And the membership was there to vote on which one they wanted to be the candidate. The candidates were kind of explaining who they were, their background, what their values are. And then we had questions from the audience. And then we had a vote. But before the vote, someone put up their hand and said, well, maybe we shouldn't run a candidate at all. And their theory was, and we hear this, of course, all across Canada all the time when it comes to smaller parties, that maybe we're just going to split the vote. And in an election where it's going to be either a Liberal prime minister or a Conservative prime minister, maybe we should just support the Liberal Party in this riding because we think on economic justice, climate change, social justice, a variety of issues, we're much more aligned with the Liberals than we are with the Conservatives. So this guy said, maybe we shouldn't run anyone, which was just kind of a disruptive suggestion to throw into the middle of an event where we were there to pick our candidate. But instead of shutting him down, I thought, you know, why don't we have this discussion? So I said, his name is Robert. Mm-hmm. I got to the microphone. I said, Robert, thank you for bringing this idea forward. The proper way to deal with this is to put forward a motion. So I helped them draft a motion that we would officially decide not to run a candidate. Mm-hmm. And when you have a motion on the floor, that opens it up for debate. So I said, who wants to speak in favor of Robert's idea? Who wants to speak against? And we spent about 20 minutes talking about the pros and cons of why would we run a candidate in a riding where we know we have zero chance of winning, and we might even split the left and help a Conservative candidate win. And I can go over some of the details with you, what the pros and cons were, but I'll go right to the spoiler, which is that in the end, we voted unanimously, the entire room, that we felt it was really important for us to have a Green candidate in this election, in this riding.
I am curious about what some of the pros were that came up. Could you tell me more about that?
Yeah, the pros of not running a candidate were pretty straightforward. It was really just a fear that if we got 3% or 7% or even just 1%, that might be enough to the difference between the Conservatives and the Liberals. And that if we didn't run someone, we could help ensure that the Liberals win one more seat, which would help Mark Carney. You know, we could actually be doing damage to our cause by running a candidate.
I want to play you a clip. I want to do something fun here.
Okay.
I spoke to Green Party candidate Shane Phillips at the Toronto St. Paul's riding.
Okay.
And I asked him why he ran, and this is what he said to me.
Well, I said, you guys are playing a short-term game. If you are going to commit to a party, you should commit and have a long-term strategy for change. Change, the Liberals and the Conservatives always play a short-term game, election cycles to election cycles, and the Liberals always say to their candidates, this is the important issue. next issue, next cycle, it's going to be, there's another important issue that we can't split the vote on, right?
Yeah. So what does he mean by playing a short-term game? Could you break this down for me? I know it was a little noisy in the background there, but
sure.
What do you think of this?
Let me flip it around and explain what I think the long game is. So if you look at the Reform Party, for example, which was in the 1980s, they started really small out west. I think in their first election they won only two seats, so they were very fringe. But they grew and grew and grew. They elected people all across the country, and arguably they ended up taking over the Conservative Party. So if you look at the growth trend of anything, whether it's a fad or a meme or a popular restaurant or a popular brand of shoes, they all started somewhere and they all started small. So it's really important for a political party to allow themselves to be small and to grow slowly in the hope that at some point they'll become a large player, a mainstream player. If every small brand, every small group, every small product, every small party quit because they were small, then we would never see innovative change. We'd never see entrepreneurial groups emerge into the mainstream because they were patient, because they played the long game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when we look at these parties that are even smaller than the Green Party, like Animal Protection Party, Marxist-Leninist Party, that have no seats.
Absolutely. I mean, people think the Green Party is small, but there's actually about 15 or 20 registered parties. And the Greens are, you know, one of the big ones that actually elect people to the House of Commons.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Abakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
So we know Canadians have been for decades good neighbors to the U.S., but now bad blood between Americans and Canadians has been hovering over the 2025 Canadian federal election. Thanks to the heavy-handed rhetoric of President Donald Trump, that relationship has soured. The Buy Canadian and Elbows Up movements have prompted many to reconsider where and how they spend their time and disposable income. Thousands of Canadians are now selling their U.S. winter escape properties and refusing to travel there. Some observers even go as far as calling it the Exodus. Such is the case for Brazier Hargerty and her husband Tim, who live on Don Pedro Island in Florida. Like thousands of other Canadians, they're selling their condo in Paradise and refusing to travel to the U.S. Elizabeth Oakley in Haliburton, Ontario, recently spoke to a Haliburton couple who've had enough. They're selling their beloved winter escape in Florida and refusing to travel there for the foreseeable future.
For the past 8 years, Nikki Brazier Hargerty and her husband Tim have owned property in Florida, a beloved place which allowed them to escape the harsh Canadian winters. That is, until this past February, when the Haliburton couple had had enough and decided to sell their little piece of paradise in Inglewood on Don Pedro Island, a quaint community accessible only by ferry. Two major hurricanes, the high exchange rate, Trump's first term, the COVID pandemic, and more recently, the condescending attacks on Canada by Trump in his second term and the trade war he started, have pushed the couple to their limits. Like thousands of other Canadians, the couple is pulling up stakes for good, selling their property and vowing not to return for at least the next 4 years.
We won't go back to the U.S. at all until he's gone. We're looking at, you know, vacationing in the wintertime in Mexico next year or, you know, one of the islands. We don't have to go to Florida. You know, it's a short, relatively short flight, and that was fun, but it's not worth it anymore.
For decades, Canadians have flocked to the U.S. Last year alone, they injected $20 billion into the economy, with more than 1 million Canadians traveling there annually. Now, thanks to Trump's looming tariffs and his threats to annex Canada as the 51st state, Canadians are selling their properties, canceling their U.S. trips, and looking elsewhere for vacation destinations. The lower demand has forced certain airlines to change their U.S. routes, with some canceling all their flights to U.S. destinations. Even Airbnb bookings are down 15% as Canadians exercise their distaste in very tangible ways. And while the Buy Canadian push is on in full force, so it seems is the national sentiment of elbows up.
We love the island. We made wonderful memories there. And I was looking through the pictures the other day, and it makes me sad. I'm really sad. And we have friends who live in St. Pete's, and permanently, they're Americans and they live in St. Pete's, and they're really sad because we won't come. And you know, up until now, we've been able to sort of put up with stuff, but not anymore. We won't anymore. A friend from that I met there through the book club on the island, they live in Ottawa, and they're selling. And we're all selling, listing for a loss, and then, you know, the buyers are taking advantage of this and offering ridiculous responses. It's an insult, but how long do you want to keep paying for something that you're never going to visit? And, you know, of the 8 years we had it, there were 3 seasons we couldn't even go.
Beverly Edgar, an agent with the travel agent next door, lives in Orangeville, but has a cottage on Horseshoe Lake. She and her colleagues have noticed a change in Canadian travel trends since President Trump took office this past January.
It's a bit of a mixed bag. I definitely, there are a lot of people that are fed up with his comments about, you know, how he views our country, and basically just saying, I'm not going to even spend a dime. But there's a lot of people that are also worried about, you know, what this has done to our Canadian dollar. So there's political stance of this isn't right and I'm not going to, you know, go there. But then there's also like the financial aspect that our dollar is just taking such a hit that, you know, it's not financially smart to go to the U.S. right now and spend the Canadian dollar. I find it's sort of a 50-50. Some are saying, absolutely not, I'm changing my plans. And others are like, well, I'm still going to go because if I don't, it's the financial part of losing the money. What I'm really noticing, which I found very interesting, is from reaching out to my colleagues, a lot of people are canceling going to Alaska. A lot of them had Alaskan cruises and they are just saying, nope. And I think what the difference with a cruise is that depending on when, how far out, they're able to maybe switch their route. So instead of saying, I'm going to Alaska, they're deciding to go somewhere else other than they can pick a different place that isn't benefiting the U.S. We're lucky we have the whole world to be able to offer people, right? There's so much more to see than the United States.
Edgar says Canadians are being wooed away from U.S. travel by countries like Australia, New Zealand, England, Ireland, Croatia, Portugal, and Thailand. As well, Canadian travelers are opting to stay home and explore places they've never seen here. She says much of her role is to calm travelers' worries and offer alternatives, especially for clients who refuse to go to the U.S. for the foreseeable future.
Just try not to get too anxious about it. Yes, exactly. Just sort of. And then the other ones that don't have something planned already, I'm trying to give them options of other places to go other than the U.S. That for the ones that are really like, I just don't anywhere but the U.S., you know, and there are a lot of those.
As for the Brazier Haggertys, they're feeling a whole host of emotions as they wait for their condo to sell. In the meantime, they're remaining passionately patriotic Canadians.
Frustrated, annoyed, insulted, but then you just want to wipe your hands and let it go. Let's just be done with it and walk away. And it was an experience that we never have to do again. We enjoyed it when we were there, made some really good friends. Say, so long, farewell. You guys are a mess and we are not coming back. Absolutely. Elbows up. True North, strong and free.
And that's all for us at Viewpoints. A big thank you to our journalists this week. Mia Johnson, Dan Jones, Elizabeth Oakley, Rick Conrad, Caleb Nickerson, Bill McCouche. Our national editors are Conrad Fox and Victoria Fenner. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. Thanks for keeping us company this week. And until the next, ciao.
Better in Embrema. Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. Radio@frequencynews.ca.